Welcome to the Gear Garage Live Show. This weekly YouTube show covers whitewater rafting, river safety,
oh God, I lost my paddle,
gear, and anything else Zach feels like rambling on about.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to the Gear Garage Live Show. I'm in Idaho this week, and we haven't done a show for a few weeks, so I'm happy to be back. I have a bunch of questions, and we're just going to get right into it. Let me add something else first. There we go. Oops. Sorry, everyone. I'm still learning how to do this. Why can't I? There we go. This is a show. I'll talk about some rescue courses really quick. Just get a kayak, this video I've started to watch, and then get the questions. And we'll start with rescue courses. I have been investing a lot of time and energy into offering really high quality rescue courses for boaters, specifically for boaters, because I found that a lot of rescue courses are oriented towards firefighters, first responders, to agency people, like people that count fish in the river. And the needs of those people are different than needs of whitewater paddlers and the education you might cover. But also, whitewater kayakers probably have different needs than rafters. And that's me based on like me sending our guides or encouraging our guides to do rescue classes and then coming back and telling me the content, things that were covered that I don't think was either correct in some cases or the right content for professional guides and or private boaters. So based on that, we've invested a lot of money into time, training. We did one rescue course for guides this spring, and I think four for private boaters. And we're going to ramp that up next year. So I'm just saying this now because if you're interested in taking a rescue class, looking down the road, I'd highly encourage you to sign up with us. I know that's self-promotional, but I have this platform and I'm going to use it. And I really put a lot of time and energy into a really great curriculum and really great classes. So I want to just share that with everybody that we're going to have some really cool courses. The private boater courses we do are mostly on the Clackamas, and we do a day mostly on land, a day mostly swimming, throwback at the riverbank, right? Going to one spot, throwing throw bags, swimming, and then one day we go downstream. And so we get to practice flips and different things on the fly. We get to deal with foot entrapment scenarios and just realistic things boaters would run into. So it's a very active course. And we go down river as part of it, which is pretty rare in a rescue course. The professional guide one, which is designed only for professional guides, I wouldn't want private boaters in it. And vice versa, professional guides shouldn't go in the private boater one. They're a little different content. We do that one in Hood River, and we spend 3 days, usually, depending on flows, of course. But our plan is to do 3 days on the Hood River. We do like an 18-mile stretch. And we do 6 miles a day. And so during that day, we float down, do an exercise, float down, do an exercise. So we're boating a lot. We're practicing all these skills you do on the river. So every day is on the river for the professional guide one. But for that one is specifically for professional guides. So I want to share that with all of you. I'll probably talk more about that as the year goes on, because I'm pretty excited about it. And it's something I'm excited to grow and do more of. Next, I'll talk about Just Get a Kayak. I just started watching this, and I just want to just talk it up. This is where I'm at so far. I'm in minute five.
All right, and, moment of truth, Forerunner.
I'm going to turn the volume down. But I don't know. I like it so far. A lot of these kayaking videos are like super self-promotional or like braggadocious. This one seems like so far like two cool dudes and a sweet story. So if you're looking for something entertaining, so far I just really like this, and so I just want to throw out that it may be worth the watch. I know these guys worked really hard on it, and I heard them talk about it on the River Radius podcast. I just kind of like their take on it and their thoughts, and I don't know, I like the story that they're trying to tell. So anyway, just wanted to throw it out there. If you're all looking for something to watch other than like, I don't know, Foundation, a great TV show, or something else you're watching, maybe give that a shot. Yeah, I'm kind of obsessed with the TV show Foundation right now. It's really interesting. All right, let's move on. Let's get to questions. And the first question is, I got invited on a Middle Fork salmon trip for September 3rd this year, coming up here pretty quick. It's a week away. And the group that invited me is planning to deadhead the first 25, then picking up people gear in Indian Creek. The trip leader told me that I have to pack light. Oops, let me go back. But I feel that I can easily make it down the upper 25 with a fully loaded boat. as I've done before 1 year ago after the blowout of Velvet Hills Half Mile. What do you think about this? I think if it's, you should listen to Trip Leader. If that Trip Leader wants you to do it, you should do it. Like, people that organize trips and trip lead have a lot of things in their mind, a lot of stress and a lot of things that not everybody understands. And so maybe they want you light for a reason that they can't explain, right? They just don't want to take a chance. Maybe you made it down last year just fine, but there was some luck, maybe. And maybe this year there's some bad luck. And so I'm a big fan of, like, you know, maybe ask for what you want. Like, I like to be heavier. And then he's like, no, I really want you to be light. But cool, I respect that. So I don't think you can should be like, but I'm that good. I'm allowed to run a big, fully loaded gear boat. I would do what they ask. That's how I feel. But that's my opinion. If anybody has a different opinion, throw it in the comments. But I'm somebody who recognizes the extra work and stress and challenge it takes to organize and lead these trips. And so when you sometimes put your own hopes and dreams and wishes ahead of their plans and the group, it causes problems. And so, that's how I feel about that. Okay, another one, Middle Fork, low water Middle Fork, heading down the Middle Fork on September 7th for 6 days. Four of us in IKs, packing light. How do you think IKs will do in top 25? I think great. I mean, I don't know how good you are, but I mean, it's super fun in an IK, not top 25. I mean, it's not even the top 25. It's really like, it's the top six that is the most, you know, through Velvet. And then it mellows out a little bit. And then there's like Powerhouse and some shallows, a lot of shallows you got to get through, the Sheep Eater shallows and more. All the artilleries are no big deal. And then there's Pistol, Lake Creek and Pistol. And then after Pistol, that's mile 21, I think. The next four are super easy. So I think it's really about the first six, honestly, at the low levels. P.S. Are there any small group adventures off the beaten path you've been wanting to explore? I mean, my list of the adventures is long. I think right now, if I was to tell you what I want to do next, would be, I mean, what comes to mind is there's the South Fork of the Trinity overnight in California. That's been on my mind for a long time. I would love to do that. This is things I've never done. I want to hike into the Wallawa, I think. Yeah, the Wallawa. It's up in the Eagle Cap. There's a hike and run either to a lodge or I want to go upstream of the lodge. That's on my list. The North Fork of the Crooked, I've been trying to do for years. It's a cool two-day trip I've been trying to do. I have a couple things in Bhutan I want to do, but I'm not sure I'll be able to do them. They're a little logistically challenging. And then I really want to go back to, like, Tajikistan. It's amazing there. And then a couple trips I want to do again that I haven't done for a long time. Forks of the Kern. I'd love to go back to the Middle Feather if the group is right. That's a short list, but I have a handful of other things that I'm hoping to do, but we'll see. I work a lot these days. I used to do a lot more like kind of adventures, little adventures, but we've been so busy because the instructional side of the business is growing and I travel a lot to teach now. Like, I do less of these adventures and more courses, which, as I'm getting older, is probably the right thing to do. Like, as you get older, it's harder to do these hard adventures. And it's actually really rewarding to teach courses. So, I think that's where my life is headed. But there's a handful of adventures I still want to do. Oh, the Zanskar in India is something I really want to do. That's up there, too. Okay, well, that's a lot of reading to do. Pushing versus pulling loaded boats on private trips. Okay, based on the topic, this is a tough topic. Because I haven't read this yet, but I'm just going to give you my thoughts. And I'm going to say, like, when your boat's loaded, it tracks really well. So when you point it somewhere, it wants to go there. So if you're really good at pushing and using tracking, you're going to do that a bit more in a loaded boat than a not loaded boat. The problem is, if you're not good at it, you're going to just get destroyed. And also, if you're a loaded boat and you're pulling, you're fighting the tracking. And so it's much harder to pull a loaded boat a lot of the time. So like if I'm pulling a loaded boat, I'm a lot of times I'm trying to be 90 degrees to the current. Or I'm just doing like a little bit of pulling, but it's hard, and then turning and dropping down something. Oh yeah. Anyway, this is a complicated one. It's not exactly easy to answer. I'm going to say if I have a loaded boat, I'm going to do a lot of pushing. But I do not recommend that for 80% of boaters, because you're going to struggle. I just, to be a tiny bit arrogant maybe, I've just boated a lot. And I ran sweep a lot on the Middle Fork. And when you run sweep, you really learn, understand tracking. I really get tracking, where it takes a long time to develop that. Okay, so anyway, enough of that. First question, I've seen several other videos about pushing versus pulling, but I was curious about deadheading Middle Fork Salmon Trip Review video. It seems like the general consensus is to push unless you need to set up for something. Have some of your other recommendations been to pull as much as possible, especially for newer rowers or heavy gear boats, or is this situation dependent? It's situationally dependent. I do pull on the deadheads a lot. I think the videos you saw were like Hell's Half Mile, where I pushed a lot. But on the deadheads, I'm pulling quite a bit. There's certain moves I'm pulling. I also, like, in the shoots, I downstream ferry that move to the right. I pull down, I spin around and make it down. So sometimes I'll downstream ferry even, which it takes a lot of oar management. It's super situationally dependent. It depends on how heavy your boat is, how experienced the rowers are, and basically those two things. If you're not really good at rowing, you're probably going to pull. You probably should pull a lot. So it seems like general is the push. I don't think general consensus is the push. These not push a lot on deadheads specifically. This is specifically deadheads. If we're talking about low water Tuolumne, which is harder than a deadhead, I'm going to do more pulling actually. But on the Hell's Half Mile in particular, you want to keep the momentum going a lot of the time. So like I'm pushing because I want to, and there's so many shallow rocks. You're just always hitting shallow rocks. As soon as you stop, that shallow rock the boat just dies, and then you got to deal with it. So I'm trying to just keep that momentum moving downstream. But if you get offline a little bit, that momentum just takes you somewhere bad. Whereas in other rapids, I might pull for a maneuver to get the right spot and then just push as much as I can. So this is very hard to describe. I guess I'm just going to say it's situationally dependent. Second question. On our recent trip to the Maine Salmon this year, we had a 118-foot capo, two 14-foot round boats, and my 16-foot round boat. I was the heaviest boat by far. I wasn't worried about weight and low water correlation on section. How do you balance the creature comforts of a really comfy trip in low water, like below 2 feet on the Middle Fork, and the main necessities in this scenario? Me, personally, I will leave creature comforts behind. Like, I'll sleep on a Thermarest and eat backpacking food. I don't really care. Like, you can talk to my guides. I'm always trying to leave stuff behind. And they're like, no, we should bring that. Like, I'm like, no, we don't need it. Why are we taking this extra weight? Because when you bring extra stuff, you have to load it in your truck. You have to unload it from your truck into the boat, launch that every day, carry it up, carry it back down. Oh, is my phone ringing? What is that ringing right now? Somebody calling me on, it's so weird. Is anybody hear the ringing going on? Is somebody calling me on StreamYard somehow? All right, please stop ringing. Anyway, hopefully this ringing stops because it's very irritating. Actually, I'm going to take these headphones off. So hopefully you don't hear me still. So I leave stuff behind all the time. Like you have to carry up and down. You have to rig it and unrig it every day. And when the trip is over, you have to load it off your boat into a truck, drive it somewhere and unload it. I just like stuff is like work. I like to boat. I like to be on the river and boat. Thanks, Chase, for saying there's no ringing. Like, that was really weird. It was like ringing like a phone call, but it wasn't my phone. Looks like it stopped. Okay, so I'm all about, let's go minimal. Why are we bringing all this stuff? But a lot of people want their cot, and they want like maximum 3 pair of shoes for me. I know people that bring 5-6 different pair of shoes. You have your muck boots and your Chacos and your hiking shoes and your camp slippers and your Crocs. Like, personally, I think that's insane. But also, I feel like the boating culture has kind of gone that way. Like when I was younger, we just went boating. We brought a few things and went boating. Now, people are bringing so much stuff. So that's all long way of me saying, yeah, I'm going to bring my stuff. Cool. All right, moving on. Raft recommendation. I'm looking for a boat recommendation that would be good for rowing day runs like the Clacker White Salmon. Would love to row the wind sometime. It could be used for light one or two night trips to the passengers. This is the conundrum. Everybody wants the boat that does this and this. So for your thing, Clacker White Salmon and one or two night trip, I'm going to say 14 and a half foot boat. I'm going to say Air 146 R, some NRS Hypalon thing, some high side probably has a 14 and a half, 15, maybe 15, 14 and a half, 15 foot boat. I designed a boat for a wing that's a 14.6. It was my best attempt at this. It was like an old Avon Adventure, which like the Adventure, you could be a paddle boat. You can get it. It's a little big for the white salmon, but it would work. It's great for the clack. But also like you could take it down the Grand Canyon. It's not very big and it would be hard, but like to me, like the 14.6, maybe the Adventure was a 14, it was an all-purpose boat. The boat I designed for wing, which is based on the Adventure, was 14.6. But there's the 15 foot boat. There was an old Avon Expedition, I think. It was a 15. That 14 to 15 foot range, big tubes, because if you're gonna have overnight stuff, it's nice to have extra volume in the tubes. Yeah, with some thwarts. That's what I would go with. Sotar probably makes a 14. Yeah, I mean, you could do a 13. You could probably do overnights in a 13. You're just tighter. And you could also paddle boat down the White Salmon in a 16. It's just going to be big. So somewhere in that 13 to 16 range. But I'd say with a 14 and a half-ish is pretty sweet. And then next question is, I was wanting your take on length as well as models. And I see a lot of questions, some questions in the comments. I'll get the questions at the end. Just everybody knows. Thank you for leaving questions. I was wanting your take on length as well as models. I looked at the Sotar ST and SL and wanted to know if you had a preference for rowing or technical whitewater. It's been so long since I've rowed a Sotar ST or SL. I don't know the difference, but they're good boats. Sotar makes good boats. I really like what Jeremiah's doing. I'm sure you'll be happy with either one. I'm guessing one is diminishing tube and one isn't. I'm personally not a fan of diminishing tubes, so whichever one is not diminishing tubes, that's what I would recommend. Hope your season's going well. I appreciate all the things you've done. Yeah, thanks. Okay. All right. Craig's commenting, don't take a 14 half boat for whatever you use. I disagree. Honestly, for big boats are better, because if you're going over a 10 foot drop and your boat's 14 feet, it's just going to eat it up. You know, it's just not going to be a problem. Specifically, yeah. Hypalon's boats bend a little bit more, so they don't do well over waterfalls. So yeah, I probably wouldn't take a 14 and a half foot Hypalon boat over Houston. That's a good point. Yeah. My 14 and a half foot wing would just eat it up like it was almost like it's nothing. Right? You just pump that thing up, you just go over, it's just a solid thing. The Hypalon's gonna bend a little bit. You can only get them so tight. So I probably wouldn't take a 14 and a half. I'd love a 14 and a half foot boat, but I wouldn't. And Hypalon, my worst run at Houston ever was in a 12 foot Hypalon boat where the boat just went in half and I got thrown to the front of the boat. So yeah, I agree. None of the commercial companies use Hypalon boats. They're all using Airs and a few have Sotars. Okay. Clean water storage. Zach, hope the season's been great for NWRC. Yep, it's been a great season, everyone. Thank you for asking. We're almost done. I'm headed out of the Middle Fork here in a couple days. And then we have a rowing school that started today. One more rowing school on a 4-day trip. And then we're done. Yeah, it's been a great season. A few more trips left. I saw this new product from Lifestraw and wanted your opinion. It's a 5-gallon pressurized water filtration system. It seems like it could replace everyone bringing water jugs. It's good for 4,700 gallons for one cartridge. Whoa. And can take straight river water. It looks a little bigger than the 5-gallon bucket, but if every boat in the group had a 5 to 10 gallons of water, this could replace a lot of jugs on a trip. Cool. I think there's a photo of it here too. I don't know. This looks sick. I mean, I'm not going to buy one right now. It looks sweet. I think the thing I like about it is it has, oops, I wanted to make this. There we go. And I wish I could zoom in a little bit. It looks like there's handles on the top could rig down to a boat, like they're riggable. My main hesitation with this would be durability. Like, how durable is it, honestly? Commercially, I don't think we would use this because of durability, and also like our system is so good. Like, we just have water jugs, and I mean, it's kind of cool actually. But anyway, we have water jugs, and we use Aquamira, which does a good job of treating the water. Yeah, so it's cool. Yeah, interesting. But private boating, I would definitely try this. It's expensive, $300, but if I was on a private trip, I think this would be pretty sweet. All right, moving on. Topic or lake. Okay, before I read this, I may not read this whole thing. I made a video about this. You take the distance between your oar locks, and you multiply that by 1.63, and that's your oar length. It works. It doesn't work on the high end. If your boat's over 20 feet, maybe it doesn't work. I don't know. And for like 10 foot below boats, it maybe doesn't work. But I'm just going to go with that. That's the advice. Done. End of story. Distance between your oar locks, multiply by 1.63. There's more to it. There's like, if you're sitting high, if your arms are tall, lift how big your tubes are. There are other factors, right? So let's go back. It's 1.63. Let's take the distance between oar locks, multiply by 1.63, and then plus or minus half a foot. Dealer's choice, right? Like, I'll run 10-foot oars on a boat. Most people would run nines, right? I want that power. Why not have the power? I can manage oars. Like, I have really good oar management skills from practice. So I will happily run 10-foot oars where people, like, we're running nines. And the formula gives 9.5. I'll run tens. If you get the formula that gets 9.5 and you, I don't know, you don't like long oars because you're not good at oar management or you don't like power, go nine. Cool. Don't go 8.5 because that's what I see is people 8.5s, right? So go plus or minus a half depending on. Also, like, if it's really technical water, like shallow technical water, drop half a foot. If it's big water and you want power, add half a foot. Right. So it's one point is distance times 1.63 plus or minus half a foot or whatever. Do whatever you want. I don't really care. Like, add the foot, subtract 2 feet. I'm just telling you, if you want my opinion, it's in my opinion. Okay. So that's the answer. I got to read this. Oh man. Okay. I have a question for you that I'm hoping to get some guidance on. I have historically been running a 10.5 foot RMR store with a simple 3.5 bay frame, 8.5 foot oars. Cool. I have recently upgraded to an NRS Expedition 13.5, and I'm working on a custom double rail frame building out. This is my second frame build, and it's a bit more complicated than my first, so I have some stuff to learn. My question is related to oar length. Currently, my frame is about 66 inches, 8-inch oar towers. Cool. And by the way, 8-inch oar towers or 9-inch, whatever. Do not go 12. Do not go 6. I don't care what your frame is. Do not go 12. Please don't go 12. But also 6. Only you can go 6 once in a while, but 8 is sweet. Good job. That place the oar locks are approximately 74 inches apart. There might be some slight changes here as I adjust angles, but nothing significant. I'll be rowing on a captain's chair. I'm 5'10. Okay, so one thing I started talking about, I got on a tangent. There are a lot of factors: your height, your arm length, the tube distance. It's all that together is actually mathematically insignificant. It maybe affects your oar length by like 8 or 10% at most, if everything's perfectly done. The number one, and I've done the math, so like, you just have to go with me. You can create some crazy formula, involves all these factors, but like, distance between the oar locks dwarfs everything by far. So like, when you tell me your height, it's not really interesting to me because I already know. See picture. Okay, there's a picture coming. Following recommendation, oar length calculations, which I know you're strongly confident in. Yes. You get 10 feet. Cool. Then get done. 10-foot oars. Oops. Let's go back. So this is a 13.5-foot boat with 10-foot oars, which you might think is insane. I run an 11-foot cat with 10-foot oars. So I don't think that's insane. I'm conflicted as I have a set of 9-foot cataract oars that we'll be testing soon. My friends who run 13-foot boats are confident 9-foot oars will work. It's not how, again, this is very important. I don't care that your boat's 13 feet. I don't care that it's 10 feet. I don't care that it's 18 feet. What matters is the distance between the oarlocks. Cool. I do not have the opportunity to trial a set of, this is the problem. Is like, this is why this OAR formula is so important to me. Because I teach classes all the time, private classes especially. People show up with their like 13-foot boat and their 9-foot oars, and I watch them row out, and I know in my head, they would do better with longer oars. I just know that. So every time I teach a private class, I bring extra oars of different lengths so people can try them out. They take their 9-foot oars, which a lot of people have been told 13-foot boat equals 9-foot oars. I'm pretty sure NRS has a chart that they use. Like, have you seen the movie Armageddon where there's this drill chart and the guys, you know, the captain or whatever is like, my drill chart says you're not going to hit that depth. And then Bruce Willis is like, I have never missed a depth. You can't use a drill chart. Have you guys seen this movie? You know what I'm talking about? He's like, you can't just use it. The same thing. NRS can't, their drill chart is just wrong. 13-foot boat does not mean 9-foot oars, right? 14-foot boat does not mean whatever oars. It's not about boat length. It's about distance between the oarlocks. That is key, right? I could go on about this forever. So, like, when people take the courses with me, I just look at the oar, and I, right away I measure the oarlocks. If somebody shows up with a boat, I measure the distance. I know that they need 9.5-foot oars. I go play with your 9-foot oars. Let's go see you row a little bit. They come back, hey, try these out. I'm like, oh, these are way better. I'm like, yeah, cool. You now have, like, you can use your 9-foot oars all you want, but you do know that 9.5 is better. And because it's happened to me so many times, I'm so confident. I mean, it happened every time. Almost every time somebody comes to a course with me with the wrong oars, I give them the correct oars. And like, oh yeah. And then I'm like, hey, I'm really sorry. You are going to now sell these 9-foot square tops you just bought. I'm sorry. So-and-so just sold you the wrong size oars. And I recognize you can't, you're right. You can't try different oars. I totally recognize that. That's why I put so much time and thought into this equation. And again, the equation could have been like this big long thing where you put in your height and your arm length and your inseam and your tube diameter and all these things. And it could have been very unwieldy, but it really does come down to distance between, I'm confident in this. So that I know you can't test out oars, and that's why I care so much about like this OAR formula, which is simple and it works. So you just, I don't have the opportunity to trial. Nobody has the ideal opportunity to trial set up for 10-foot oars. And this will be an expensive purchase for me. I get that, because everybody who, again, they bought their bread. The number of square tops people have come to courses with me with and then had to sell afterwards because they found out that they had the wrong size oars is unwieldy. You'll be fine with their 9-foot oars. You'll live. It depends what you want to do. If you want to go run class 2, you're going to be fine with your 9-foot oars. If you want to go run class 2, you'd be fine with the 9.5-foot oars. If you want to go boating. So for me, like a lot of my channel and things, I'm about like, let's go run some stuff. Let's go run the Wind. Let's go run the Illinois. Let's go run the Middle Fork. Let's deadhead the Middle Fork. Let's go run the Selway. Let's go do stuff people have never heard of. Like if you want a boat like that, you want the right size oars. If you're just doing like Desolation Canyon and the Rogue once a year, I don't know. Your wrong oars are going to be fine. But if you want to actually go boating, you really want like the right oars. Okay, so I'm on a rant right now, but it's because I'm passionate about this. Cool. So I'm also unsure how a captain's chair might impact rowing dramatically. Those captain's chairs are terrible. And I like the people at Downriver, and I hate to call their captain's chair terrible. The captain chair is great for Desolation and Gray. For like class 2 desert rivers, those captain's chairs are cool. They're comfortable. You sit high, but for running whitewater, you're sitting too high. They're just not adequate. Or do I shorten the width of the frame so the 9-foot oar is a better fit? I'm all ears if you have any advice at all. If you have the time to provide a bit of, okay, yeah, let's look at your frame. So boom, that's a pretty wide frame for the raft. So yeah, you can see it's a wide frame and the oar towers are at the very edge. If you think about this, if you hit a rock wall on either side, will the raft hit first or the oar tower? If the answer is oar tower, it might be too wide. And literally it's just a safety thing or just like a, you know, there are vertical, you hit rocks. And so if your oar towers are sticking out past the raft, it's going to hit the oar tower, it's going to bend it in. And all of a sudden you can't row. No matter how much you tighten the screws, it will bend it in. So you can row, but it's going to be funky. So if it was me on this boat, I would narrow the frame and go with 9.5 at all. For our courses, for our class 3 rowing schools, pretty much every student gets a 13-foot raft with 9.5 foot oars and the frame that matches it. So, like, I think 9.5 is the right length for a 13-foot raft as long as you have a frame that matches it. Your frame is so wide that you need 10-foot oars to do it properly. So the other thing, I mean, that captain's chair, like, it depends what you're doing. If you're doing the Rogue once a year, if you're in that captain's chair with 9-foot oars in that frame, I'm worried for you, honestly. Like, you're going to struggle. You'll make it. I mean, if you're a good boater, you'll get it down the Rogue, right? But if you're just doing, like, class 2 desert rivers, this is fine. This is perfectly adequate. And this is where I get in trouble. I get like, so interested in people having the right setup, and then I realize they're just doing class 2 and 3. This is fine. But again, if you think you're going to go run, like, high water middle fork, low water middle fork at all, Illinois, Selway, South Salmon, Wind, even the Hood, like the Tuolumne in California, anything like of challenge, like 3+4, this is putting you at a big disadvantage. So what I would do, if I was to give you advice, narrow that frame so 9.5 foot oars work well, or just keep the frame and get 10s, or narrow the frame and run 9.5s, or narrow the frame and run 9s and just deal. But I wouldn't run a frame that wide with 9-foot oars. And I would ditch that captain's chair unless you feel like you need a throne. You want to sit 6 inches lower than that chair is right now. You're sitting way too high. That chair height is messing up the geometry. The oars are going to be at your knees. And then what you're going to do to solve that is you're going to go buy 12-inch extension, 12-inch oar towers, and then you're going to need 10.5-foot oars, right? The problem with that chair is it sits too high for the oar towers, and then people get bigger oar towers, and then they need ridiculously long oars. I would sit on that cane, and that cane and cooler is a little bit high, actually, but I would try to sit at or near the level of that frame, maybe a few inches higher. Like, get a cooler box that fits in that spot, and just sit on the box, right? Don't sit on that huge captain's chair thing. I'm just not even, yeah. And again, unless you're doing class 2 or, like, maybe once in a while class 3, that chair is fine. But that chair is not designed for white water. That chair is designed for, like, comfortable floats. Like, I'm going for a float. I'm going to go fishing class 2 on some section near my house. Like, nobody is running Cherry Creek with that chair. Nobody's running the Tuolumne or the Selway or a high water middle fork with that chair, right? That's like you got a cooler full of liquid death next to you, and you're going fishing for the day. Hopefully that's good advice. Those are my thoughts, my uncandid thoughts. I probably should be more candid with my thoughts, but whatever. Okay, let's go through some of these comments. I've been a casual raptor for the past 3 to 4 years and finally pulled the trigger on an NRS 140. I heard about 10 multi-day trips. Sweet. Awesome. Good boat. I have one right behind me. I have an ERS 140 right behind me. I like to push myself a bit more and explore tougher rivers, but don't want to get over my head. What rivers do you recommend as the next step up from the Deschutes? Clackamas. Yeah, I'd spend a lot of time on the Clackamas. Go to the Clackamas, make some friends, do it at a variety of river levels. Then maybe those friends will take you to the Hood. Maybe they'll take you to the Malala. Maybe get the North Antium, the North Umpqua, things like that. Go to the Deschutes, go to the Rogue. That's a step up. And then from there, they'll be like, oh, let's go do the next level above that, which I'm not going to get into right now. But yeah, I would go to the Clackamas for Oregon is a great place to get better. Cool. Other questions here, and then we're almost done. Sean had a textbook run a mid-shoot. Sweet. Cool. Good job. Good job, Sean. Brent, question about boat inflation. I did the class 3 rowing school in June. It was a great experience. I noticed the gear boats were significantly softer than the rest of our boats. Any reason why? They just didn't feel like pumping them up, probably. It's just, you know, those wings that we have hold air really well. And, you know, when you're going through the mid-shoot or the fish ladder, you want the boat a little soft, Right. And they don't need to be tight. I mean, if I was running class 4 plus in them, I'd want them tight. But like for the Rogue, they don't need to be super tight. And so having a little loose is fine. And then every day they lost air. Maybe the guides were just working hard. They didn't feel like pumping their boats up. A slightly deflated wing is solid. But they probably did care about you guys, your student boats, all having proper inflation. So you would succeed in rowing and feel a properly inflated boat. But like on a Middle Fork trip, you know, we're taking Hypalon boats to leak a little bit. I'll probably pump them up one day. I'll just ride them soft on other days. Good question. How much life do you think rolling, folding a raft takes off the raft lifespan? It depends on the boat. If it's Hypalon, probably almost zero. If it's a Moravia, some probably. Moravias don't like being rolled. A wing, probably some. Sotar, probably some. Yeah, those like urethane boats, it's going to start putting some weird folds in them, some weird stress. So I don't know. I'm guessing if you rolled it a lot, maybe 10% of its life. That's just a guess. I'm sure the raft manufacturers are like, no, that's not wrong. It's like 1%. I don't know. I'm just a guess. But I'm just guessing rolling it a lot is harder. On Hypalon, maybe 1%. On like a urethane type boat, maybe PVC, maybe a bit more. Like again, 10% was a wild guess. It's probably wrong because I'm wrong all the time. Yeah, not much. The real issue is if you roll, if it's a Sotar, a wing, a urethane boat, or like a Moravia, which is PVC covered in urethane, when you roll it and transport it, when they roll, they get these corners. They like fold a little bit in a little corner, and that corner gets like abraded in transportation, just like in a vehicle. That's the most likely way to get a hole in those boats. And it's not hard to do. So if you want to protect your boat, if you're transporting it rolled, get a boat bag or just be very thoughtful about where it's sitting in the back of a truck or whatever. So it's not being jumbled around. There's not stuff around it hitting those little corners. But if you want to maximize lifespan while those boats are rolled, I would just get a boat bag. Cool. I think that's it. Sweet. Good episode, everybody. I'm on the river next week, but I'll probably be back the week after that. And yeah, thanks everybody for watching, and we'll see you here soon.